Now, in a 500-page report released in July by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Trump officials acknowledged rising global temperatures, and more specifically that temperatures would rise by 7 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of the century. The report was meant to bolster President Trump's decision to freeze fuel economy standards for cars and trucks built after 2020, the justification apparently being that these rising temperatures were already inevitable and tougher emission standards wouldn't make a difference. Our next guest is here to talk about the report, the Trump administration's relationship to climate change, and what policies could be put into place to address these rising temperatures. Rachel Cletus is the Policy Director for the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Rachel, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, how do you read this report saying, yeah, temperatures are going up by 7 degrees by the end of the century, but this particular action would be too small of a difference maker to bother implementing?
Wow, it's such a stunning, cynical statement from this administration. To talk about 4 degrees C, 7 Fahrenheit increase in temperature so blithely as if this wouldn't cause such significant climate impacts and such significant economic harms, it's just stunning to see this. So let me get one thing clear. We are not locked into a 7 Fahrenheit 4 degrees C increase. Our choices today still matter, and the choices we make today, in particular about the way we use energy and how we cut our emissions, will make all the difference in terms of the temperature increases we'll see. We've got to keep temperature increase far below this.
Now, talk about the impact of this kind of change in average global temperature, because on a day-to-day basis, a 7-degree difference doesn't sound like much, but what does that mean in a global perspective?
Well, to give us a sense of what the science is showing us, just last year at the end of November, the Climate Science Special Report was released. This is done by the U.S. Global Change Research Program. It's a consortium of 13 different federal government agencies. And this report essentially is the best available science captured about the impacts we're already seeing in the United States, as well as projections of what might happen as emissions rise. And what's stunning in the report is it captures how much of these impacts we're already seeing at temperatures that are just at about a degree increase above pre-industrial levels. We're already seeing global average sea levels that have risen by 7 to 8 inches. Along the east and Gulf Coast of the U.S., we've seen much higher rates of sea level rise increase. We're seeing coastal flooding go up. We're seeing wildfire seasons worsen, get longer and more intense. We've seen worsening drought, heat waves, extreme precipitation events like we saw with Hurricane Florence and Hurricane Harvey and in the Midwest earlier this spring. So we're already seeing climate change is already here. So when we look ahead and when we see the choices we have ahead of us, it becomes crystal clear we've got to do our best to limit these kinds of impacts from worsening.
And I want to touch on something you said up front there. Some people might look at this and say, oh, we're already feeling climate change. We missed our window. There's not much we can do. And you say, no, that is not the case. Why not?
Every fraction of a degree we can avoid makes a difference. And that's the crucial thing that we have to understand. We're already, unfortunately, locked into a lot of very serious climate impacts because of our past and current emissions. But we do still have choices. And those choices can make all the difference between parts of the world that will become uninhabitable, including along our coastline here in the U.S., or places in the Southwest that will see worsening heat waves, and places that might be saved if we are to limit temperature increases. These harms will grow exponentially as temperatures rise. There are also some dangerous feedback loops that start to kick in at higher temperatures. We'll see runaway ice sheet loss, which will contribute to really catastrophic sea level rise. We could see changes in permafrost melting, ocean acidification, which can really affect our fish and ecosystems in the ocean. So these are the kinds of impacts that we want to do our best to avoid, and we still have a chance of limiting some of these worst impacts.
Talking to Rachel Cletus from the Union of Concerned Scientists, talking about climate change. A report out from the Trump administration predicts a 7-degree increase, that's Fahrenheit, by the end of the century, but says a particular policy change fuel economy standard increases, more strict standards, wouldn't make a big enough difference. And Rachel, as we turn to policies, let's start with this one. What kind of impact can fuel economy standards have on greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, fuel economy standards are critical to lowering the emissions from what is now the largest source of heat-trapping emissions in the U.S. So it's a really important sector of the economy that we have to try to limit emissions from. And these were very sensible standards that had been agreed to. These were standards that both the industry and environmental groups supported. They were standards that were not just going to help limit emissions from the sector, but we're also going to create a generation of cars that would be safer, more fuel efficient, that would pay consumers back in their pocketbooks in terms of saving fuel costs. So there are lots of good reasons to implement these standards. And this reversal should be seen for what it is. It is a cynical ploy to prop up fossil fuel interests. This is not serving the interests of the American public. These vehicle efficiency standards were widely accepted, appreciated. They were going into effect. And now, just like across the board, across climate policy, this administration is turning back the clock. Whether it's a power plant carbon standards, vehicle efficiency standards, or standards to limit methane emissions, which are also a highly potent heat-trapping gas from the oil and gas industry.
You had mentioned power plant emissions, and that's been another big change from the Obama administration to the Trump administration. Can you talk about what's changed in the last couple of years?
Well, what has changed, unfortunately, is that fossil fuel interests have given marching orders to the administration. The administration has appointed at the very highest levels of agencies like the EPA folks who really are doing the bidding of these fossil fuel interests. They are not looking out for the mission of the agency, which is to protect public health and well-being. That is what the EPA's mission is. And climate change is posing such significant problems to our economy, not just in dollar terms, but harm to people, that it's really an abdication of the agency's duty to the American public to see it roll back standard after standard. These protective standards deliver not just cuts in heat-trapping emissions, they also deliver a lot of public health benefits from reducing co-pollutants like mercury, nitrogen oxides, sulfur oxides, particulate matter, all of which cause a huge public health burden to Americans. So we're seeing them roll back every national climate and clean energy policy we have, and it is really a very sad, very dangerous set of actions.
A big argument from the Trump administration and others is that some of these climate change-related regulations were hurting the economy or would hurt the economy, whether it's in terms of more expensive cars, more expensive energy. What do you say to those concerns?
These are completely spurious arguments. They're the opposite of what is actually happening. So if you look at the power sector, for example, what we're seeing in the marketplace is that cleaner forms of energy like solar, wind, even natural gas are winning out against coal. They're winning out in the marketplace because they're cheaper. They're cleaner, they're more desirable. People are really embracing, utilities and consumers are embracing these new forms of energy. So in a desperate attempt to prop up coal, they're now trying to float these ideas of bailouts for old coal plants. This is just, you know, it's so blatantly against what would help us in terms of moving towards a clean energy economy. So it's really important to recognize that the totality of the actions they're taking across the board and the rationale for them is so flimsy. This is not about the economy because the economy is thriving even as we're moving to these cleaner forms of energy.
We're talking to Rachel Cletus right now, Policy Director for the Climate and Energy Program for the Union of Concerned Scientists. She's with us to talk about a recent report from the Trump administration that acknowledges that temperatures are rising globally, will rise probably over the next 80 years, but argues against particular forms of action to stop that. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this news? What actions, what policy changes do you think should be taken to address climate change? Or are you worried that we're too far gone? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation about climate change and the Trump administration's call to lift emissions regulations because it sees rising global temperatures as inevitable. Our guest is Rachel Cletus, Policy Director for the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about climate change, science, and policy? Do you think the Trump administration is correct when it says, in this one report anyway, that rising global temperatures are inevitable? What steps, what policy changes would you like to see when it comes to tackling climate change? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll go to your calls now. Jonathan is with us in Madison. Jonathan, hi.
How's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I guess what I wanted to bring up is that I think that our simplest approach to climate change and also actually improving the economy would actually be to incentivize farmers to take on regenerative practices and then also educate them on how to do so, because our most affordable and most powerful way to sequester carbon is actually through photosynthesis. And we can do this through grazing animals. We can do this through growing crops as well, as long as we're not relying on these inputs to produce our food. And then also the impact of animals, we can also reduce that impact by raising them in a more natural way.
Jonathan, thanks for the call. Rachel, do you see agriculture and different agricultural practices as part of the solution?
Absolutely. We do have to manage our lands, our agricultural lands, our forests, and our farming practices in a manner that will help us store more carbon in soils, release less methane and other heat-trapping gases into the atmosphere. So folks might know that already right now our lands in the U.S. are what they call a net carbon sink. They help sequester carbon. That means they're storing carbon and helping us reduce the amount that's released into the atmosphere and contributing to climate change. What's worrisome, though, is as temperatures rise, we will start to see some of this land sink start to dissipate. Our forest might start to die out. We're already seeing this in some of our western landscapes. As we have wildfires, we might start to see that stored carbon being released into the atmosphere. So we really do have to safeguard this sink and, in fact, enhance it. Your caller is absolutely right. There are practices that we can undertake on our farmlands, in our animal rearing practices, that can help limit the amount of emissions and even serve as a way to store emissions in our soils.
Jonathan, thanks for the call. Going out to Tony, calling from Madison. Tony, hello.
Hello. I guess I was just thinking of something that Gaylord Nelson, the senator who gave us Earth Day, once said when he was confronted with economic challenges to environmental regulation. He said, you got to remember that the economy is a fully owned subsidiary of the environment. No environment, no economy.
Tony, thanks a lot for the call. Rachel, what do you think of the Gaylord Nelson quote?
Wow, that really, I couldn't agree more. People tend to think of these things as, well, we have to make a choice. But in fact, history tells us, experience tells us, that it's when we do, when we invest in our economy and our environment side by side, that's when we get the best outcomes in terms of our prosperity and our growth. So, you know, just last year, for example, we had such a number of terrible extreme weather and climate-related events, a terrible hurricane season, flooding, etc. We had over $306 billion worth of damage, according to NOAA, from these events just last year. So let's not kid ourselves. This is not about, quote-unquote, just an environmental problem. Climate change is going to touch every aspect of our life, and it will and is already is affecting our economy. So we have to take this seriously.
Tony, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Rachel Cletus from the Union of Concerned Scientists about climate change. Before we go back to our callers, Rachel, I've seen some arguments that absent action at the federal level, there's an opportunity for city and state governments to step up on climate change issues. Is that something you're seeing happening?
Absolutely. I think what's been crystal clear is even though we have no leadership from the Trump administration, around the country there is a very different sentiment. We've seen states, cities, universities, tribal nations, we've seen absolute outpouring of support, for example, for sticking to the goals of the Paris Agreement. Everyone understands that we're doing this not because of some faraway distant future or an agreement that was forged somewhere else. We're doing this because it matters for our lives, for our children's lives, for our grandchildren's lives. This is about the kind of world and the economy we want to leave them. So yes, in the absence of leadership from the administration, there are many, many entities around the country, businesses, religious leaders, labor leaders, etc., stepping up to say, well, we're going to do it anyway. And they're showing that it can be done. That said, we absolutely do still need national action. We need an administration that takes the science seriously, that understands the implications of the science, and enacts policies in line with it.
Let's go back to your calls now. Connie is with us in New Lisbon. Connie, hello.
Hello. My comment is, it seems like a lot of the ways we try to save energy and preserve the environment aren't so healthy for us in the long run. And I'm thinking specifically of two things, compact fluorescent bulbs, which I have to put in the hazardous waste at the recycling center, and then also the batteries and the hybrids, which we still don't have a good solution for how to manage them long term. What do we do with them? How do we recycle them if we even are able? And I don't like the idea of those things being around for my daughter and any, you know, grandchildren they may have in the future.
Thanks for the call, Connie. Rachel, do you see these worries about environmental trade-offs, more energy efficient, but downsides?
There's no question that in some sense we are in a world of trade-offs. We have unfortunately delayed so long to take action on cutting our emissions that some of the choices we face are daunting. I think, though, that we as a global community, we as a nation, need to step up to this challenge. These are not reasons to shy away from the essential imperative to lower emissions. Yes, there will be technologies that won't pan out or that will have unintended side effects that we would then need to choose other technologies move on, innovate. But this doesn't take away from the clear underlying imperative to cut emissions. And that's where what's coming from the Trump administration is so deeply disingenuous. You know, for example, in the document that you mentioned at the top of the segment, what they say is that, we're going to need to invest in such substantial increases in technology, innovation, and adoption compared to today's levels. Yes, actually we do. We do need to make these investments. So yes, it's a daunting challenge, but we can do it. We've always been a can-do nation. We've been a nation that thrives on innovation. So just because the challenge seems daunting now doesn't mean we should shy away from it. I take your caller's concerns very seriously. There are unintended side effects from some of the technologies that we are trying to employ today, but we need to work through finding solutions to those.
Thanks for that call, Connie. In our last minute or so, Rachel, do you see, in terms of public opinion, people coming more and more around to being worried about climate change and wanting to take action?
Absolutely. Around the nation, we've had such a stunning series of climate-related events over the last couple of years. There are very few real Americans out in the country who are experiencing these impacts who would dispute them. So what we need now from our policymakers is to actually work in the best interest of the American public and their constituents. Stop denying the science. Start acting in the interest of the American public. Stop pandering to fossil fuel interests. Yes, it's a difficult task, but we're up to it. And we do not want to shy away from it and doom our children to a world of 4 degrees Celsius or 7 degrees Fahrenheit increase in temperature.
Rachel, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Rachel Cletus is the Policy Director for the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. She joined us today to talk about the recent report released by the Trump administration, which outlined that global temperatures are likely to rise by 7 degrees Fahrenheit by the year 2100, the impact those temperatures will have on the planet, and policy changes that might work to prevent that temperature increase over the years.